Hi, everyone. Today it's my privilege to be joined by Dr. Daniel Amen, physician, psychiatrist, and author of the New York Times bestseller, Change Your Brain, Change Your Life, as well as 22 other books. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today, Doctor.
You are welcome. Thanks for having me.
I think it's fair to say that you're probably most well-known for your work with brain imaging and the impact that brain functioning itself has on people's lives. Can you tell everyone how you got interested in that research and what you found the implications are for someone who might be suffering with anxiety or panic attacks?
I'm a double board certified psychiatrist, but in my psychiatric training, I didn't get any information about brain imaging. When I learned about it about 20 years ago, it just changed everything I did, because when you actually look at the brain, you get so many more ideas about the proper diagnosis and treatment of psychiatric conditions that I just couldn't imagine not looking. And when it comes to issues with anxiety and depression, what I realized is they're not single or simple disorders, that there are actually many different types of anxiety and depression, and tailoring the treatment specifically to people's brains rather than a diagnosis like panic attack just made a lot more sense.
Okay, now can you explain what SPECT imaging is? I know that you cover that a lot in your book.
So we do two types of brain scans at the Amen Clinics. We do one called brain SPECT imaging, which looks at blood flow and activity patterns. We do another one called quantitative EEG that looks at electrical activity patterns. And SPECT is particularly helpful because it gives us three pieces of information on the brain. It tells us areas of the brain that work well, areas of the brain that are low in activity, and areas of the brain that are high in activity. So good activity, too little or too much, and then our job becomes balancing those areas.
Okay, now in the book you talk about the five brain systems that are most involved in our behavior, and I think that from what I read, the functioning of the deep limbic system and the basal ganglia probably have the most impact to people listening to this. Can you explain what those are and how they might play a role in anxiety?
Well, you know, I'm not exactly sure that that's true. I mean, those two systems are very important. So the deep limbic system is about involved in your mood and your emotions. Basal ganglia tend to be setting your body's idle or anxiety level. However, there's another system called the anterior cingulate gyrus that's involved in shifting attention, and I find that so many of my panic disorder patients are, they have trouble shifting their attention. They get locked onto things, stuck on things, same thought in their head over and over. So in another area, the prefrontal cortex helps you supervise your behavior. It's involved in things like forethought and judgment. And so many of my anxiety disorder patients, their prefrontal cortex works too hard, so they can't let go. They just sort of spin on negative thoughts and negative behaviors.
Okay, now I believe I remember reading that you actually had an overactive basal ganglia. Is that right?
I do. And I'm sure it's ever since I was a little boy, and I probably inherited from my mom. And but, you know, with work, I've been able to harness it.
Sure. Now, what I really enjoyed about reading your book was that you discussed skills and exercises that can be done by people to improve in whatever area they might be having difficulty with. Like, just as an example, you gave several things people can do to heal the basal ganglia, including controlling negative thoughts, guided imagery, and breathing techniques, and things like that. But one of the things that you discussed that I thought was really great was your 18-40-60 rule. Can you talk a little bit about what that is?
You know, I love that rule, because what it says is when you're 18, you worry about what everybody's thinking of you. When you're 40, you don't care what anybody thinks about you. And when you're 60, you realize no one has been thinking about you at all. People spend their days worrying and thinking about themselves, not you. And, you know, there's a whole group of people who have social anxiety disorders. They're spending all this time thinking about other people when that's just a waste of time.
Right. Yeah, I know that when I struggled with anxiety, my first initial reaction was always to go someplace and run away and hide. So if I, you know, if I was going to lose my mind or whatever, I was afraid of people certainly weren't going to see me doing it, you know. But now you also do a lot of work with children. What have you found to have probably the most positive impact for children with anxiety disorders?
Well, you know, there are a number of very important things with kids. And the first thing is make sure they don't have food allergies. Because if you're allergic to milk or wheat, you can be anxious. Your brain won't work as well as it could. The second thing, it's very important to teach children to manage their emotions. You know, it's funny. I remember Paul Simon's song, Kodachrome. It starts off with, "When I think back on all the crap I learned in high school, it's a wonder I can think at all." And that, just, you know, we need to be teaching children practical things to manage their minds rather than just sort of dumping a lot of information in there. So one of the things, I just finished actually talking to my daughter's first grade class on ants, automatic negative thoughts, the thoughts that come into your mind automatically and ruin your day. And what kids are never taught is they don't have to believe every stupid thought that they have. So, for example, if you get the thought in your head, "I'm going to fail the test," well, then you are anxious, and so then you don't study properly, and you're more likely to fail the test. So learning how to correct the negative thought patterns has been shown in a number of studies to be as effective as antidepressant or anti-anxiety medication. I actually think it's a skill we should start in the first grade with kids. We can also do very simple breathing exercises with them to help them with anxiety, or simple biofeedback exercises. For example, when you teach a child to warm their hands with their mind, their whole body goes into a relaxation response.
Do you find that guided imagery is also helpful for children?
Can be very helpful. And kids are actually much more hypnotizable and willing to do things like hypnosis and guided imagery, which can have a dramatic positive effect on anxiety issues.
I would imagine they're probably a lot more used to pretending and things like that and aren't quite as cynical as adults would be with that sort of stuff. Now, something I think is important for people to understand is that in most cases, it isn't required for them to actually have a brain scan done to identify the issue, and that, in fact, they can do a really good job identifying what part of their brain might need improvement on their own. Is that right?
You know, I realized a long time ago that not everyone is able to get a scan. So based on thousands of scans, I developed a series of questionnaires to help people predict what their brain would look like. And, you know, I put them in my books, and they're on our website for people to take.
Okay. Now, I know that my last question might be a little bit of a tough one, but if you had just a few pointers or insights or pieces of advice for someone listening who might be suffering with anxiety or panic attacks or might be having a child or might have a child with anxiety that they could start using right away, what would some of those be?
Well, the first thing I'd do is make sure you get a good medical evaluation so that your thyroid doesn't, it's working right. You know, there are some medical conditions associated with issues with anxiety and panic and depression. So make sure that's not a contributing factor, because then all the other things won't work. The second thing is learn how to manage your thoughts. Don't believe every stupid thought you have, and keep a journal. I tell people, write down the thoughts and then challenge them, question them. So we call them ants, automatic negative thoughts. So you have to have an anteater in your head sort of patrolling the streets of your mind. And then simple things like diaphragmatic breathing, simple forms of meditation can just be ever so helpful. And if you have a panic attack, do this one-minute exercise. Take a deep breath. Hold it for 2 seconds. And then take 5 to 7 seconds to blow that breath out. Really take time. Blow it out slowly. And when it's all the way out, take another deep breath. Hold it for 2 seconds. Slowly blow it out. Do that 5 or 10 times. You flood your brain with oxygen. And if you're doing that, plus correcting the negative thought patterns you have, odds are the anxiety is going to be much, much better.
Great. That sounds like wonderful advice. Well, Doctor, that's all the time that we have for now, but I want to thank you again for being so generous with sharing your time with me. And I just want everyone to know that, without exaggeration, I found your book to be one of the most interesting and informative books relating to anxiety that I've read in a real long time. So I encourage everyone to jump on over to Amazon.com and go grab a copy. So once again, the book is Change Your Brain, Change Your Life. And if anyone would like to know a little bit more about you, your clinic, or your research, or look at the other resources that you spoke about or books that you offer, where is the best place for them to go online and do that?
If they go to our website at amenclinics.com, there are a lot of great information, resources for them to read and see.
Okay, great. Well, thanks again, Doctor. It's been a privilege to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.